It's 8 o'clock, so we're going to get started here. We don't have a quorum just yet, so we'll deal with the minutes in a few minutes. Representative Gunther.
I think they look very good, Mr.
Pardon, sir?
The minutes look very good.
Oh, no, no. Why don't you present your bill, House File 363, for possible inclusion. I guess we've got a quorum. Representative Backer, would you be so kind as to approve to move the minutes?
I would be so kind to move the minutes, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Backer, Representative Backer. Are there any corrections, additions, or subtractions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes from February 12th, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign. Minutes have been passed. And I can call it to order. Representative Gunther, how are you doing today?
Very good. It's somebody's birthday today, though, you know.
Somebody's birthday?
Yeah.
Would that be St. Valentine's or something? Or
no, Barb's birthday today.
Ah. Well, happy birthday. no, I won't go there. Representative Gunther.
House File 363 is a bill that I started a while ago. You were there when I started, Mr. Chairman. And it helps minority entrepreneurs start businesses through the initiative funds and the regional development, what do you call it?
Neighborhood
development, which covers a lot of things in the cities, but they also have a Greater Minnesota outreach also, so we thought we'd treat them pretty well. We have left the same amount for probably too long because, as my testifiers will testify, that they're doing so well they could do with a little bit more. And with that, I would love to turn this over to whichever one of you want to start.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and all the committee members, and thank you for taking time to learn more about this special appropriation that will benefit the entrepreneurs and communities.
If I could interrupt you for a moment, could you identify yourself for the tape?
Yes. My name is Diana Anderson, and I am the president and CEO of the Southwest Initiative Foundation. Our region includes 280,000 residents in 18 counties and two Native nations in Southwest Minnesota. So from Ortonville to Jackson, Hutchinson to Laverne, and the Upper Sioux community and the Lower Sioux Indian community. Economic development is in our DNA. We have a 33-year history of business finance, and in 2017 we closed our 1,000th loan. Since 2001, we have administered a successful microenterprise and financial technical assistance program with funding from the Small Business Administration and USDA, which has allowed us to reach populations traditionally underserved by mainstream capital markets. 31% of our current portfolio are women-owned businesses, and 12% are minority-owned businesses. The generous support of the Minnesota State Legislature over the last 4 years has allowed us to significantly leverage these dollars. We have a strong network of economic development organizations and other technical assistance providers within our region who have been critical partners in this work. And your funding has been critical for us to continue this work. We have supported more than 200 aspiring, emerging, and existing diverse entrepreneurs through your past support. Diverse entrepreneurs are not just part of the future landscape of our communities. They've been part of our region's business development for decades. Main streets have and continue to be revitalized. New businesses are sprouting up. New traditions and different cultures are woven into the fabric of our communities and enrich local citizens. The city of Worthington in our region is the most racially diverse per capita city in the state of Minnesota. 60% of the residents are non-white. 35 languages and more than 50 dialects are spoken in the public schools. Wilmer is our region's largest city with a population of 20,000. Over 70 businesses in Wilmer are owned by people of color. Our smaller communities are also experiencing demographic shifts, too. In Milan, nearly 40% of the 344 residents are Micronesian. In Walnut Grove, over 40% are Hmong. Latino, Somali, and Karen communities are among the largest diverse populations represented throughout our region. We've gained deep insight from working intentionally with people of color to promote economic development. Our intentions are to take what we've heard working with businesses and not only start more diverse businesses, but also strengthen the diverse businesses already here. We want to support all phases of business development, from startup to retention, expansion, and ownership succession for entrepreneurs of color. We've learned that technical assistance is paramount in the areas of business assessment, business planning, financial projections, access to capital, business management, bookkeeping and financial management, marketing and personnel management. So customized technical assistance and broader business development will be key to this work. Southwest Initiative Foundation is a key part of the economic development ecosystem in Southwest Minnesota, and we want to ensure this ecosystem is strong, healthy, and equipped to support all entrepreneurs. We're asking for this appropriation to do just that. This money is a wise investment in further advancing the spirit of entrepreneurship and collaboration that is alive and well in Southwest Minnesota. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Witness number, testifier number two. Who wishes to go?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Pam Bishop. I'm the Vice President of Economic Development for Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. We cover 20 counties in south central, southeastern Minnesota. We serve about 500,000 people and 175 communities. Thank you, first of all, for the commitment you've made in previous years to allocate funding to support what we call our Prosperity Initiative. Because of your commitment to growing minority entrepreneurs just 3 years ago, we've not only seen an increase in the opportunities for us to serve minority entrepreneurs and see them grow, but we've also seen other funders come forward realizing that a commitment to this particular population base is important to our economic well-being in our communities. We anticipate that over the years, in future years, minority growth will continue at a rate of about 25%. We know that the white Caucasian population that has been somewhat the generation of leadership in our communities will slowly go away, and more leadership will be required by the incoming population bases. We see strong increases in the Somali population as well as the Hispanic populations, particularly in Rochester and Mankato. But we're also seeing high growth in some of our small towns like St. James, like Austin, like Faribault, like even Ellendale, Le Sueur, where the community has been challenged by not only helping to bridge the cultural differences and opportunities that exist, but also how do we build a pipeline of economic opportunity for those individuals who are not familiar with our processes and our services and our resources. So 3 years ago, we decided that we needed to begin an intentional outreach with these communities and with these population bases. We identified partners across our region that were already doing some work so that we could provide them some resources to also provide outreach through technical assistance. Each year, we typically invest in about 30 companies, about $1.5 million through debt financing and equity investments. We'd like to do the same for our minority entrepreneurs. Today, we've been able to serve close to 50 entrepreneurs through a 12-month program. It includes a conference, which we provide networking opportunities, allow folks to come together to get to know each other, and to start building those important relationships, because it's all about trust. Once we build the trust, we help them understand the resources that not only our foundation can provide, but the partners that are included in this work. We then ask them to fill out an application to help us understand their commitment to growing their company and being committed to a process that we believe will provide strong outcomes in a very quick period. Once that application is reviewed, a business assessment is provided. That helps us give us a deeper look at to what the company's real needs are and how we can help them in a six-month period of time. Once those needs are identified, we match them with a coach, a consultant, someone with expertise. It could be in bookkeeping. It could be simply business planning. In some cases, just help them build the confidence that they need to have to actually execute their dream in southern Minnesota. Today, we've been able to work in 10 communities. We've been able to invest in about $200,000 because the end result is to help get these companies financed. So the dollars that you provide to help us continue to build the Prosperity Initiative will help us also to think about the lessons learned. What are we learning in the work that we're doing? We're learning that we have to make sure that our communication pieces reflect the multiple languages that are being that are growing in our communities. We also need to help communities understand how to build welcoming cultures and community engagement and leadership. So once these folks are established through their businesses, we can help build the additional foundation components to making sure that the communities provide the leadership needed for successful economic development. So with that, we thank you again for your commitment to growing entrepreneurship activities, especially in the minority area of our work. And we look forward to any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you. Last but not least.
Not least at all. And good morning, Chair. Good morning, Committee. It's very nice to be here with you this morning. We were actually expecting flowers because it's Valentine's, but I guess a little bit of your time will be.
Could you identify yourself for the tape, please?
I'm Isabel Chancellor. I'm from Neighborhood Development Center. I'm the Vice President of the national programs that we have, but also the Greater Minnesota work that we've been doing in the last couple of years. And so that work was made possible by the Senate, by the legislature, and with Representative Gunther's push, we've been sharing our work, Neighborhood Development Center's work, and so which is very similar to what you've already heard, where we provide entrepreneurship business plan training, technical assistance, one-on-one to folks who are really not having these opportunities before, and providing micro-lending, what we call, you know, really high-risk lending that we do. And so we've been sharing this approach for the last 2 years according to your direction. And what we found is there's a lot of wonderful things going on in Greater Minnesota, of course, around entrepreneurship ecosystems. And we are bridging relationships with our partners out there. So this is kind of an urban-rural connection that we're making, and I think it's for the good. Our work has been concentrated in a lot of areas of Minnesota, but especially Southwest. And so we're really excited about venturing into a relationship to start the program. Lower Sioux Reservation would be starting the program. We would be passing over all of our knowledge to them to get going, and what they're excited about is building a building that's going to be showcasing their local artists and their makers, and this is something that they haven't done before. And these are folks that are underground entrepreneurs, and they're really hoping to kickstart the community's local economy again by doing this, and so we're really pleased to be there. We've been in conversations with Wilmer, who has the community in the county has a really robust ecosystem for entrepreneurship. But a missing piece, or a piece that we actually are wanting to increase, is the exposure of the people of color in Wilmer, in the area, especially the immigrants in that community. And so we have been in conversations with many, many institutions there about starting the NDC approach in that community. So we are full in support of this particular bill and in full support of the work that's happening there in that region, where we feel like there's a lot of promise, and we are learning a lot just from being in the rooms together to talk about what's really not happening and what is happening in rural Minnesota, and how can groups like Neighborhood Development Center support what's happening, provide coaching, technical assistance, or whatever it is that we need to the nonprofit groups that have been tirelessly working there for so many decades. So that is where we are at this point.
Mr. Chairman, you've heard a lot of good things about what these three groups are doing. I think there's got to be some attention paid to make bosses out of this group of people. And the way we can do that is to help them start businesses. And it's very important that they get to do the same, have the same advantages as everybody else does. And the Neighborhood Development Center has a big, huge presence in the metro area. I know, I remember one time they brought big cookies to our committee. And it took me about a half hour to eat it. I ate pretty fast. But anyway, this is a good bill. I appreciate your support. And I look forward to it coming back in a couple of years with an even better report. Well, thank you. I will move House File 363 to be included in a possible omnibus bill. Is that the way you want me to put it?
Well, I think Representative Sundin, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifiers, this is I'm sold American on this. It's a good program. I'm sure, you know, it'll get a lot of people started off in some fine little businesses. But this is the Jobs Committee, and I'm just wondering how many actual jobs are going to be created rather than just sponsor entrepreneurs over throughout the state. But I want some meat and potatoes numbers on who's going to be employed and are they going to have benefits? Are they going to have paid time off, that type of thing? So can you elaborate a little bit on who else is going to benefit rather than just the single entrepreneurs?
So I can give you a bit of what our experience has been in the Twin Cities, but I'm not sure how helpful that's going to be for the rural context. So we have trained over 5,500 entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs. We have developed about those businesses that we have been able to nurture have developed 3,000 jobs. And our average lifespan for a business is 9 years, when nationally it's about 5 years. And so all of that comes from Wilder Research. And so every 2 years we spend quite a bit of time with our evaluators looking at all this data, collecting information from the business owners themselves. So we know that we have a track record of creating jobs. We also know that in Willmar, for example, if you added all the small businesses together, they actually have many more employees than Genio, who is their largest employer. So keeping an ecosystem of entrepreneurship alive and well at all sides is critically important. What we do know in St. Cloud, because St. Cloud has begun the Neighborhood Development Center approach there, particularly with the Somali community, and they'll be branching out into the African-American community in that region, in that area, is that through training two cohorts of Somali entrepreneurs, they've been able to support many businesses. They've been able to create, I think it was a really small number, though, for right now, which is like 4 to 5 new jobs. But the other thing that's critical that's happening is that there's 23 existing restaurants, grocery stores, corner stores that are Somali-owned or East African-owned in the area. And it has been an issue with keeping everyone up to par with safety for the safety department. And so our counterpart in St. Cloud, we've been able to train and get everybody up to speed about how to actually bridge the communication between the Department of Safety and the entrepreneurs that we're working with and trying to actually correct all of those issues in a speedy manner because it has been a problem. And the city does not want to close down any store. And so it really has been saving those jobs, saving those businesses, saving those businesses that are serving the local community, and then learning how to really operate in a very new paradigm for many of these entrepreneurs. So our work is about creating jobs, creating businesses, but also sustaining and saving those businesses that are actually providing jobs to the community.
Follow-up, Representative Sundin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just make a statement that next time this group comes before this body, I'd like to see some hard numbers on what's the average wage. You know, are the benefits provided? Because if we're just sponsoring entrepreneurs for the sake of starting up a business with a couple of employees that aren't paid correctly, and they're relying on government social services to augment their income or lifestyle, we're not really creating anything. So I'd like some hard numbers on the wages and benefits paid to these workers. Thank you.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Sundin, today for every 10 jobs that people want to fill, there are only 6 people to fill them. So there's competition for jobs. So no one's going to pay a lesser salary than they can afford. These are primarily small businesses starting out, and they need training to learn how to start a business. And whether they know benefits, a benefit set without paying for a pension or health care is 29% in Minnesota. So you got Social Security, work comp, unemployment, and all of those things are benefits to employees. So I think to start out with a small business, with a minority owner, we need to allow them to get their feet in the ground first. But to offer a pension plan and all that stuff to start out with, and $25 an hour salary, I'm sorry, it isn't going to work.
Representative Gunther, Representative Sundin.
Thank you.
I think a more reasonable measure would be what the salaries and the benefits are of a someone you have helped after 12 months. I do understand your concerns, both the concerns, because it is the review of this committee to help jobs that pay a living wage that can sustain a family, but it's also partially to help entrepreneurs start up those businesses that hire people. So if and I have had a little experience with NDC here or there, and I know the first 6 months to a year for most of these businesses is very, very hard. So I think a better measure for us would be that after the first 12 months. So with that, I will call on Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Gunther, for bringing this bill forward. I'm in support of it. I have a question for either one of the testifiers from the Initiative Foundations. I understand the purpose for minority businesses and those downtown Main Street businesses like grocery stores and hair salons and auto dealerships, et cetera, and getting those folks on their feet. But I have a particular interest in the new economy, the gigabit economy, and what we're doing to support entrepreneurs that are developing IT applications and medical communications and ag, those advanced applications that really could launch something completely brand new that none of us have thought about yet. I'm from Red Wing, very familiar with Red Wing Ignite and now Minnesota Ignite, and would like to know if you've worked with them before or if any of these programs support that new gigabit economy. Or that's something else that we can look at a different bill for. But if you could speak to that, please.
Thank you. I'm happy to. First of all, yes, we are partners with the Ignite organization in ELA. We provide a lot of resources to support those efforts in Red Wing, so a very important component to how we're helping to drive the economy. In other ways that we do our work at the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation does include healthcare, and we do a lot of partnerships with Ready in Rochester, the Bio Business Accelerator there, where there are many physicians that come out of the Mayo Clinic who license different kinds of technologies. Many of those come from a variety of places in our country to locate here and to build an economy that might be related to some sort of new innovation in the healthcare industry. We are starting to see a lot of student entrepreneurship, and that's not something we've talked about this morning. We are doing a very specific outreach to MSU, to Winona State University, and some of the private campuses in Northfield, where you will see that these younger folks understand the technology world much better than I do, and are coming up with new initiatives. Some of the challenges we have in that area that we're trying to wrestle with is these folks come to school here in the United States, but don't necessarily stay in the United States. So some of the things that we need to think about as a region is how do we continue to carve out opportunities to build that new economy through the knowledge that is being brought here from other places of the world, especially on our student campuses. and help them to understand the value that we can bring to Southern, to their company, and keep them here in our region and in our state so that they can help grow new technologies that will benefit our economy in Southern Minnesota.
Thank you. We have two more people to call on. I'm going to ask people to keep their questions and answers relatively short, because we want to get through these bills and not rush the last one. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that response. So just, a concluding comment, Mr. Chair, as we look at our entire portfolio here at the, for the final bill, would like to make sure that we include funding or efforts to support this gigabit economy. I think this is a good program, but to recognize this doesn't cover it all, and in response to Representative Sundin's issue as well, where else can we create jobs? So I want to make sure that we have that focus as we look at our final package.
Well, I think we're going to eventually have to speak with the Senate about any new programs that we try to put together after their admonishment of their ideals and principles yesterday. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to thank Representative Gunther for bringing this bill forward. It's a good bill. The work that NDC in creating entrepreneurs, we know when you create a small business, you are creating jobs. You become a job creator. And when we look at rural community, the whole debate that we had a few years ago around increasing the minimum wages, one of the biggest conversation we had about that is that what we can afford in a city cannot always be what they can do in the rural community. So we responded to that because we realized that. And so when you give people opportunity to be these job creators, you create a sustainability, you create growth in their community, in their environment, and you release the burden of the state to have to take care of individuals. And so they're not union jobs, right? They're not union jobs. They're not just about always livable wage jobs, and I'm a huge advocate for a livable wage job. But we have to live in the realization of where we are in the rural community and what is afforded within those communities. But the opportunity to create sustainability, to create jobs and entrepreneurship, is definitely the direction that we need to be going in. And so I just want to thank the work of NDC and the support through coaching and just sometimes walking these business through these individuals and their business through a process that allow them to be sustainable way beyond the national norms of a new business. So again, just thank you.
I don't think there's a question there, Representative Cosney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gunther, thanks for bringing this bill forward. And I was looking at the handout here. Maybe your testifiers can talk about briefly. I know we're short on time. A little bit about the bilingual skills. As I introduced my bill yesterday and presented that, I was kind of surprised to learn that immigrants with limited English skills earn on average about maybe $11,000 per year. But with improved language skills, that can quadruple to almost 41,000. And that certainly has a big impact in terms of the economy and the regionality where the purchasing power of that segment increases, and with the entrepreneurship and their ability to provide for themselves multiplies out in the community and creates more wealth and prosperity and economic development in that community. So if you haven't covered already, and just briefly, just tell me a little bit more about the bilingual skills that I think the funds in this bill would help. It says increase the number of coaches with bilingual skills, because I think that's an important component. Thank you.
I believe you're referring to the document that I handed out. One of the challenges that we've experienced and learned as a part of our commitment to this work is that right now we have mostly white Caucasian coaches trying to assist minority entrepreneurs with a variety of languages, right? And so it's difficult sometimes to have a conversation when there's an interpretation challenge that's perhaps prohibiting them from effectively talking through a business challenge. And so what we have been struggling with, to be honest with you, is that we have very few coaches or people that have expertise in business training that have self-identified themselves in southern Minnesota. So it suggests to us that we might want to do more outreach with the NDC and other organizations that can help fill that gap that we have right now until we're able to build up a stronger profile of business coaches that actually reside and work specifically in southern Minnesota. So I think it's just a challenge that we're experiencing. It's something that is causing us to take more time with entrepreneurs and therefore not maybe getting to the kind of outcomes such as jobs that we're all hoping for. So this is patient entrepreneurship. And the transformational piece will take several years because as someone had, they're just getting their feet wet. These are aspiring entrepreneurs, but we need to make sure that we're matching them with the kinds of folks that they can, number one, trust, because we know that's a big deal when it comes to someone just new to developing a company, and making sure that they understand and are on the same page in terms of language.
And I would like to add, committee and members and chair, so that is definitely true, and the things that we have noticed in the 26 years that we've been doing our work is that there's definitely, and that is an issue. And our recommendation to a lot of all of our entrepreneurs who are monolingual at the beginning of their business, because quite honestly, you get into business because it is the first thing that you know, and you're usually serving your population and your culture with a service or a product that they just can't get anywhere else. Now they're in a new place. But what we have always provided in our coaching and technical assistance is that ESL is quite important. And fortunately, in the Twin Cities, we have many, many avenues for our entrepreneurs to take that on. But also, there's a language of business. And so what we see is our entrepreneurs learn that language of business. They may not be able to do the day-to-day conversational pieces, but they definitely can start to deal with their vendors, greet their customers, answer questions. And so that is also building up their ability to serve broader than their own population, which is really key in any market, is to serve the people beyond your population, and that is a message that we are very strong on with our entrepreneurs. We have had a lot of success doing that, and in one particular way on University Avenue when the light rail came. We discovered a lot of businesses that were just serving one population, and we had to turn that around and let them know with 40,000 people coming a day plus, and we did reach those numbers immediately. How successful can you be if you broaden your market and your ability to serve that population? So these are things that are all very important, and I think ESL programs would be a key instrument in any ecosystem that involves entrepreneurs.
And those ESL services are often available through community ed programs, and when you've got a community that's really collaborating and working together, they're ensuring that individuals have access to those resources. And oftentimes there is an entrepreneur in the community who's been successful, really paved the way, and becomes a mentor for others. So in Wilmer, it's a gentleman named Zach Maboub. And Zach has been a successful entrepreneur, very proficient in his English, very connected into the community, and has worked hard to bring other entrepreneurs from the East African community into the entrepreneurial ecosystem. And so as they build their English language skills and build their business skills, Zach has been a remarkable mentor to them. So,
And Mr. Representative Gunther, before we lay this bill over, I will tell the committee as a whole that I have it at least three NDC assisted businesses in the district, and I have several in the district next door. It is a very successful program in the metro area, and looking at the committee, I know there's at least five of us that have NDC successes in our district. I wish you the best of luck in Greater Minnesota, having the same. It is not an overnight success. One of my favorite restaurants almost went out of business except for NDC. So I will look as favorably as I'm able on your bill. And with that, we're going to lay House File 363 over for possible inclusion. Next on the list is House File 412. Representative Ekman. Representative Ekman, would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, members, I'd like to move House File 412 for possible inclusion.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'm pleased to be here this morning with Karen Blackburn from Cook County Higher Ed. If you're not familiar with Cook County Higher Ed, it is located in Grand Marais, Minnesota, on the North Shore, and has been providing certificates, degrees, and opportunities for learning and workforce training in Cook County for several years. Cook County's location at the tip of the Arrowhead creates a unique challenge for the community and its residents. There is no better example than Cook County Higher Ed. Karen will give you more details, but I want to say we can't do it without state support. We are here today asking for help in launching the culinary program, supporting the need for health care workers. Mr. Chair, I know you understand the need to connect workforce development to higher ed, and this organization does it better than anyone else in the state. With that, I will turn it over to Karen because she's got the details.
Thank you, Representative Ekman. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Karen Blackburn. I am the Executive Director of Cook County Higher Education. Thank you, Representative Ekman, for your support. I appreciate the opportunity to share our story and needs with you today. You have a handout and a folder in your pack that gives you additional information. For over 20 years, Cook County Higher Ed has been collaborating with regional colleges and universities to provide certificates, degrees, and workforce training to the residents of Cook County. Our job at Cook County Higher Ed is to provide educational opportunities that support our residents and our businesses. Workforce development programming is a priority. Our campus, as Representative Ekman said, is in Grand Marais. That's on Lake Superior and 40 miles south of the Canadian border. It is the end of the road, 120 miles and a 2.5-hour drive to the nearest campus. We are home to 5,000 residents. 92% of our land is public land, and 50% of our homes are owned by non-residents. Our tourism economy serves over 1 million people a year. At Cook County Higher Ed, we are very flexible in our programming, and we are able to quickly meet the educational needs requested by our local businesses and employees, so they do not need to travel 2.5 hours to get training or a certificate. In short, we connect our workforce needs to higher education directly. I come to you today to request $100,000 in workforce development funds to support two workforce development initiatives. As in most of Minnesota, Cook County is experiencing a labor shortage. Our tourism industry has historically relied on international workers. For the past 2 years, these federal visa programs have been in flux, and we simply cannot rely on having the workers we need to keep our businesses running. To address the problem locally, a partnership was formed between my organization, the local school district, resort owners, Hibbing Community College, and IRRRB to bring an accredited culinary school to Cook County. The school is located in the brand new state-of-the-art culinary facility at the high school, a $1.2 million project funded by local bonding. School opens in August. And that's the folder that you're looking at. And some of those pictures in there are, you can see some pictures from the facility. It's amazing. We are recruiting students from out of the area and out of the state. We can provide jobs and housing at the resorts because affordable housing is also an issue in Cook County. And they can simultaneously earn a culinary degree while working and apprenticing at local restaurants. These classes are also available to our interested high school students. They will get college credit. Recent high school graduates wanting to remain in the county and non-traditional local students wanting to increase their standard of living. Culinary schools are closing. One of the reasons is that the debt the students graduate with cannot be supported by the entry-level wages in the industry. Our partnership with IRRRB, the resort owner, and Nemo Jet's talent development program will allow these students to graduate with little or no debt. As an accredited program, students are also eligible for FAFSA. It is a great opportunity for our local residents and our large and small resort and restaurant owners. In the next year, we want to replicate this effort in the healthcare field. There's a need for all healthcare workers in Cook County. Our current providers have an acute need for LPNs and RNs. We would like to provide consistent two-year programming that allows our residents to start and continue their nursing degrees while living and working and raising families in Cook County. We will continue to provide entry CNA classes and start an LPN to RN on-site program. To provide local classes taught by our accredited state colleges, we need a critical mass of 13 to 15 students. This is 15 students that have all met their prerequisites and are prepared for full-time education. If we cannot enroll that many, we will need to pay for the empty seats. All of the tuition dollars from these classes flow through to the accredited institutions, and in this case, it will be Itasca Community College and Hibbing Community College. This tuition model is the same for all of our post-secondary degree programming. We help students identify long-distance education opportunities. We enroll in the programs. We apply for financial aid with them, and we support them through their programs with free tutoring and provide them with 24-hour access to our campus and technology. All of that is provided to the students for free. We collaborate with nearly 20 institutions of higher learning across Minnesota, as well as Advanced Minnesota, as part of our workforce development work. It's a fantastic model, and it is working. We use our current allocation through higher ed to fund our work with long-distance students. We are asking for workforce development funds to bring the instruction to Cook County. Since our population is small and our employers are limited, we have to customize any existing training program to fit our needs. We cannot cover the cost of this training with student fees because it becomes prohibitively expensive for the student. Our current budget is $350,000. Our revenue source is local supporters, regional grants, and state funding. In closing, workforce development funds will enable us to bring on-site programming to Cook County, which provides all the benefits of college institution without the enormous infrastructure expense of a campus, provides tuition dollars to regional colleges and universities, most importantly, improves the lives of our residents, and allows our businesses to thrive with skilled employees. Thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Are there any questions? Representative Moran?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. thank you for bringing this bill forward, but I'm just wondering why you're in the Jobs and Employment Committee and not Higher Ed.
Can I take that? Well, for the higher ed money, we have funding through them, and we use that for our ongoing program, which is the long distance education. For the jobs committee, we are more concerned about connecting workforce development, so not necessarily higher education, but training and trade training, which we can't always get certificates for that. There's not a certificate programs that we can necessarily bring up there, but we're really focusing on these two initiatives to try to fill the jobs in the culinary fields and in the healthcare fields.
Representative Moran, Ms. Blackburn mentioned the visa issue that we're having. A lot of our resort industry on the North Shore has relied on the visas to get summer work, to get seasonal work. And so when they formed this partnership, they realized they were not getting the chefs and the culinary arts people into the resorts that they were able to in the past, and they identified this need, so that's why they brought this part of it forward to us.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Blackburn, can you speak more to the economic value of the hospitality industry? You said I think, a million visitors?
Over a million visitors each year. And our currently, if you speak, I don't know if any of you have met with Linda Jurek from Cook County Visitors Bureau, but what she says is we are inviting all these visitors up to Cook County, and our businesses are closing, and we are not being able to offer them. Two restaurants have closed in the last summer, so we're not being able to keep up our end of the bargain when we invite everybody into the community. And the reason they're closing is they can't fill the jobs. And they're having the work, the restaurant owners are having to work all the time, and they're having all the workers they do have to work all the time. So by if we start closing down our restaurants, if we can't fill our jobs, if we can't train our local residents to fill these jobs, then our tourism industry will suffer as a result, because people will come to Grand Marais and they'll say, oh, what's the big deal? We can't even get a meal here, and then they won't return.
Representative Babby.
Just don't shut down Voyager. But Mr. Chair, I a little more seriously, although it's good, and it's got the great plaid hats. So,
right.
I appreciate your the targeted nature of this. You know, everybody is screaming for healthcare workers, and frankly, everybody is doing the same thing for hospitality workers, because the economy is so tight, the demand is there. You folks have unique situation with the seasonal nature, and then of course the interference by the federal administration in your workforce needs. So I appreciate the targeted nature on healthcare and culinary, because it seems to fit what you need right now.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, understand the bind that you find yourself in. Have you done any, like, studies or research that states that culinary is an area where you can get individuals to enroll in this program?
We have been, for about a year now, we've been visiting high school campuses and that are ProStart supportive schools, and we have been recruiting those students into our program. And what we have found is that there are no culinary schools from Duluth North, and so if we feel like with this marketing effort that we can attract the students to our area. We're having good luck with them saying they're going to commit. They actually apply and enroll through Hibbing Community College, and they can't do that until August. So until we know, and until we actually have them enrolled, we won't know who we have enrolled.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So excuse me if you answer this. Well, so what would you do with the funding? How would that support?
The funding will go about 50-50 to supporting the culinary program. What we're doing now is a big recruitment effort, driving around the state and visiting with the schools. We're also creating programming that we're hoping will pique the interest of people so that they will enroll. We are calling it culinary programming. So. To sort of get them started on the process so they want more. And so we're just supporting the development of that program and recruitment at this stage. For the healthcare workers, we have to develop the whole program in terms of convincing Hibbing and Itasca that we have the numbers to meet the need, having them hire the local instructor, setting up the program, finding the students, making sure they have all their prerequisites met, and also marketing for that program.
So, Mr. Chair, so much around development and promotion.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And to support, and if we have to subsidize the seats, if we can't get 15 students, we have to pay the university their tuition. That makes it viable for them to hire an instructor.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm sorry, Representative Gunther.
I'd just like to make a statement. You know, it's programs like this that will continue to bring people from southern Minnesota to enjoy the positive experience you have in northern Minnesota. So if we don't have this, you know, we aren't going to go to the metro area all the time. We got to go somewhere else once in a while. So I appreciate your effort to make that continue to be a positive experience. And having good food is a good way to do it.
There are very good restaurants up there. And the ferry to Isle Royale is really the end of the road up there, as far as I'm concerned.
But,
so I want to make sure I understand this. The request, excuse me, the request is for $100,000. What percent are we subsidizing the tuition cost of the students that come to your institution with that $100,000?
You are not subsidizing that cost directly for the culinary school. That's all of the tuition is taken care of there. For the LPN and RN school, you'll be supporting Cook County Higher Education in our efforts to bring the schooling, to bring the school locally. We might pay out of our higher education funds to subsidize those seats, but you will be supporting our workers, our my employees as we develop the program.
Seeing no further questions. Any last words, any last comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad. I thank you and the committee for committing, considering this bill. I think the Cook County and the city of Grand Marais has proved themselves very resilient over the years in working on their workforce needs, and this is another way that they're going to be able to do that. So I appreciate the support.
Thank you. House File 412 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you for coming down.
Thank you.
Drive. Next on our agenda for the day is House File 263. Oh, two fine authors. Oh, there is. I knew I shouldn't have sat in front of that person that was coughing for an hour yesterday. Oh, it's just a tickle in my throat, that person said. I'm going to get even. Representative Cagle, would you care to move your bill for possible inclusion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 263 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
And I think there's the A19 amendment?
Yes, I'd like to move that amendment, please.
Certainly. Would you care to explain what the amendment does?
Sure. So the A19 amendment deletes everything after grants. So basically what it's saying is instead of studying the work, let's just get it done.
Is what?
Instead of studying the work, let's just do the work.
Okay. All those in favor of the A19 amendment, or I should ask, is there any questions or comments?
17.
Pardon?
A-17.
A-17. I'm sorry. Yeah, the A-17. Did I get that correct?
19-17.
All right. Would you care to move the A-19-0017 amendment?
I will move that amendment.
Any questions or concerns? Any questions or concerns? Seeing none. All those in favor of the A-19-0017 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill that's pretty special to me. I've in the past worked with this organization through some of the through some of my jobs that I've had. I'm a volunteer coordinator, and so it's a really fun job because you get to help people develop their skills and find what they love to do. Volunteering is a great way to explore careers, develop skills. I've had volunteers come to me who are specifically learning to volunteering to build their language skills. Also, we have lots of students that come to build their resume, do networking. And so what this bill would do is it would allow MAVA, the Minnesota Association for Volunteer Administrators, to work with organizations across the state to ensure that they're using best practices in their volunteer programs and really help their volunteers build skills and also help the organizations build skills-based volunteer positions. So with that brief explanation, I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
Great morning.
Identify yourself to the tape and proceed.
Maybe I shouldn't be so close. Great morning. My name is Nyla Abair. I am a volunteer manager for Girl Scouts River Valleys, but I'm also a MAVA chairperson for public policy. And I'm here to speak a little bit more about the impact of volunteerism and the benefits of volunteerism. I first want to thank you all for taking the time to take this bill seriously, because those of us in the world of volunteerism, our auxiliary volunteer workforce, all of those members and those that receive service from our volunteers, we take this seriously. The volunteers for our state are really some of the most valuable and provide effective contributions to our economy. A report from the Corporate on National Community Service found that 1.9 Minnesotans volunteered through a business or organization last year, which resulted in $3.3 billion economic value to our state. Boom. Organizations who rely upon volunteers are key players in the economy, adding to overall economic output of Minnesota and reducing the burden on government spending. Volunteerism also creates the conditions where the economy can flourish by investing in people through training, boosting skills, and improving the employability of people in the margins of the labor market. According to the Johns Hopkins for Civil Society Studies in 2011, approximately 140 million people in 37 countries engage in volunteer work in a typical year. If those 140 million volunteers comprised the population of the country, it would be the ninth largest country in the world, a country of volunteers. It's also important to consider that those 140 million volunteers represent the equivalent of 20.8 million full-time equivalent jobs. It's estimated that volunteers contribute around $400 billion to the global economy annually. Volunteering can provide excellent public goods and services, especially to those that may not have the ability to gain that access through other means, in both the market and government gaps. Volunteers fill gaps in supplying more benefits besides goods and services, and what Aaron was speaking to is just really building relationships in your community, elevating your skill set so you're more, of course, employable when opportunities arise. Volunteer organizations also contribute to planning and designing of service delivery through powerful advocacy to ensure that services meet the needs of specific groups or individuals. The volunteer sector also acts as exemplifiers of socially responsible business practices and business community practices by promoting corporate responsibility and linking business decisions with ethical values. So many businesses in Minnesota do see volunteer programs as a strategic measure, and it's an asset to those companies in incorporating service into their business planning. They're able to respond to their desire to have a meaningful difference in the community or in their state, and also provides their employees with the opportunity to also have that sentiment. A survey conducted by Deloitte states that volunteer programs are viewed as a strategic business initiative and not a nice-to-do employee perk. Companies that connect the dots between talent and volunteerism have an opportunity to strengthen relationships with young employees and will likely be rewarded with happier workers. The more satisfied employees are, the more likely they'll remain loyal to the company. So let's just be clear. Volunteers don't automatically and magically appear. It's businesses and organizations that make it a priority that really enhance volunteerism and show the benefits. This bill will promote innovation in volunteer utilization so that volunteers can fill gaps in solving community problems. So just to give you a brief history, in the past 20 years, Minnesota has lost significant infrastructure to promote and enhance volunteerism. The state's number of regional volunteer connection centers has decreased from 13 to 2. No state funds have been directly provided since 2002 to support the vital issues of promoting civic involvement, building skills and expertise of those leading volunteerism and empowering organizations to partner effectively with volunteers in carrying out their mission. So in closing, thank you for your time. Please support this bill. It's so valuable to many communities in Minnesota, and with your support, yes, they can. Thank you.
Thank you. And to the next testifier. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Yes, thank you, committee. My name is Karen Pfeiffer, and I am the West Community Health Manager for Essentia in Northwest Minnesota. I served Detroit Lakes, Fauston, Ada, Graceville, and Moorhead areas. About 70% of my job, though, is actually leading Becker County Energize, which is one of the models that MAVA has funded now for 2 years to help us build capacity. And Becker County Energize simply is people working together to create a healthier community. What we know about health is that only 20% of your health has anything to do with your healthcare system. And so Essentia has invested in a department, which is me, because in rural communities we wear many hats. And so in order to really address health on the community level, we created Becker County Energized about 3 years ago when I stepped into this role as a way to bring volunteers together in the community. From a leadership standpoint, it takes multi-system collaboration from all different facets, including government, nonprofit, private business, and our faith communities, because we know that they can move mountains. And we connect them with the people that are experiencing these issues so closely. The social determinants is where we focus on changing, and so that's jobs, it's our economics, it's looking at do we live in safe communities and how do we promote people in that. We do a community health needs assessment every 3 years where we encompass looking at what are the issues that are most affecting people that live in our community. And then my job is to pull these people together to be able to address those. And so 3 years ago, we really had a focus on mental wellness. I'm sure that's not a surprise to everybody. It's on everybody's radar. And with the work that we were able to do by pulling leaders together along with those most effective, they built strategies together. And part of what happened was we recognized that access to mental health services was one of the biggest issues and that people were being sent out of our community to Fargo and other places, which was an hour away, just to get basic services. So we were able to partner with other agencies and reduce the number of emergency holds going out of our community by 23%. Now, what does that have to do with jobs? The different organizations we worked with had to expand their mental health services significantly. Our mental health crisis team went from 200 calls a year to 600. They had to get more staffing to be able to serve the community so people could stay in their homes, they could stay in their jobs, they could be stable where they're at. Essentia Health has expanded, and we hired 6 new professional mental health services. This is psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists. Also, our community mental health organization had to expand staffing. So not only were we able to bring people together to learn from each other, but they expanded jobs. In our last community health needs assessment, we just finished here in 2018, the top 3 priorities, because we're able to expand with the investment from MAVA. The top 3 priorities we identified were mental wellness, again, was the top one, and adverse childhood experiences. access to child care, and substance abuse, including drugs and alcohol. We have three different subcommittees that, again, are bringing leaders together with people that experience those issues. So the adverse childhood experiences, we have one community that was able to bring the steering committee together, including many different entities, again, churches, government, private business. They've actually created a new nonprofit and are developing a community and youth center because there's nowhere for their kids to go in the evening, and they have a significant issue with 40% of their youth that feel that nobody cares about them in the community. This community and youth center is going to create new jobs. There's a healthy food bistro that's planned on being open, where not only is that going to have a job, but the kids are going to partner, so the school is involved in this as well, and they're going to come in and learn new skills and serve the community. There will be a safe place for our children to go. They will be cared for, and we know that in order to be affluent adults, that it takes one healthy relationship with a youth to make a difference in their life. There's also going to be affordable housing in the upper unit, so that's how one very small community is changing. In addition to that, our Child Care Access Committee has just began their work in the last 6 months, and two of the top strategies that were identified by working with providers, parents, and leaders was that, number one, we need to work with our faith communities and businesses to see where we can do co-located child care facilities that was affordable so we can support parents in the workforce. And then also we need to build career ladders for child care providers because they're underappreciated, they're getting burnt out, and we don't have enough of them to fill the need. We need 650 slots immediately in Becker County. We can't fix that overnight. So that group is working together to be able to build that career ladder and figure out how do we work with our academy model in the schools, how do we engage those youth in starting in this process, helping them get through M-State maybe, through a career path, and staying and working in those co-located spaces. The other community, our committee is working on substance abuse, and we have White Earth as a strong partner in that, White Earth Reservation. And one of the strategies that's come out of that from working directly, we just had a conversation last week with 40 people, 16 of them were people that have are directly experiencing this issue. And what they said was we need community health workers and peer support specialists so we can stay in our community. We have people to help navigate and support us. So right now our health organizations and other nonprofits are trying to figure out how do we expand our services and support those jobs and more integrated care models that help transfer that person across care systems. We engage over 1,000 volunteers each year in this work. Through the investment of MAVA, it's helped me bring on a part-time staff to help with the marketing, coordination, and engagement that needs to happen because it's a lot of work. But just it's an example of how one person can help transform communities by looking at volunteerism from a different way. When you start to bring people together to create the solutions in their community, they will build skills, they will feel empowered, and they will step up. So if you invest in this bill with MAVA, you are helping our local communities create their own economy. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there any questions or concerns? Any questions from the committee? I have a couple. You say there were 13 centers in 2002.
Yes.
And there's two now. Do you have a list of where those centers were?
I don't have those with me presently, but I'm sure that's something that we can make sure the committee.
Could you pass that along to the committee assistant, and he can get it to me and any other committee member that would like it. If you had such a significant, what was the cut to your agency in 2002?
My understanding is that there was funding to a previous organization, not called MAVA, and that funding was cut at the time, and so MAVA had to reestablish without any state funding, and that's where we are now.
What's your yearly budget?
That's a good question.
So, Mr. Chair, Carmeet Blumen is the executive director of MAVA. She was in a very severe car accident last weekend, and so she has a she's in the hospital right now. So she's probably the best person to answer that. If you'd like, I could text her or follow up.
I don't
with,
think you should text her.
I'm sure she's probably listening right now.
Why
so.
Don't you,
yes.
If I might, why don't you find that information
sure.
out and get it to me?
I will do that.
Seeing any other questions? Seeing none? All those in favor? Well, we don't have to vote. We're going to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you for your testimony today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions or concerns for the committee today? Seeing none, our business is concluded. We are adjourned.